yourself, which helps a lot. Welcome, welcome again. You can go ahead and find a seat if you don't have one. You can share one. That might not be a bad idea. There's always extra room on the couches. You know, you can squeeze. You can squeeze. Yeah. And we have folks on Zoom this morning. I can't see you, but I am glad you're with us. I'm Melissa Millis, white-bodied cisgender woman. I am not used to this mic yet, so I just hit it. Oh, so FYI, that might happen more often. I am wearing a black corduroy dress and an alpaca sweater. Tiff has a great little joke. When you see her again, she'll tell you her joke, maybe about my alpaca sweater comment. Anyway, I'm wearing an alpaca sweater. And as it gets colder, you can just assume I will always have an alpaca sweater on. So just like live with that, okay? Anyway, this morning feels a bit odd. Maybe a little bit of tension within ourselves. And I am just kind of noticing that I am stirred in our time together, noticing the grief that we carry, and also I am bringing quite a bit of extra, as Anna has mentioned, for herself this morning. I feel that as well, maybe partially because of coffee, but partially because I feel like my body is telling me to live into this time and to resist a bit in this time and conserve my energy. All that to say, we're going to be talking about an interesting topic for today, and that is dancing, which feels a little odd. Maybe, and maybe not. How many of you like to dance? Oh yeah, look at some enthusiasm with that arm raise. Like, I don't know if we can get it any higher or straighter. My relationship to dancing is a little complicated. And I've come to realize that any hesitation that I've had around free bodily expression was probably more tied to issues of vulnerability and oppressive body image than anything else. Maybe like some of you who didn't raise your hand, I long believed that I couldn't dance, right? It's kind of that middle school kind of feeling. It just kind of kept continuing. And I'll say that it kind of dissipated a little bit when I frequented some nightclubs in Spain studying abroad, but that's a whole other story, so we're not going to get into that one this morning. But probably my most formative experience, and I've shared this before, is that I've had the privilege of participating in many gatherings in Haiti, from funerals to Sunday morning worship services to just community meetings where dancing was frequent and a regular occurrence. My older self, in the context of safety that is this haven of belonging, being in my own skin and in community, now has much less hesitation, if you will, around free bodily expression and dancing. I almost was like, can I get an amen? There's something about dancing that disrupts the regular and often disconnected flow of life and creates new rhythms of being. As we wind down in this sermon series, Finding Rhythm, I think it is helpful to consider the rhythms of being, and particularly the invitation to dancing that allows us to locate our place in the story of God. It is a rhythm that gives way to belonging and support and celebration and eventual harmony, both individually and collectively. In it, we embrace our freedom to be the people of God in the midst of all that life holds, through life and death, through the dark and the light, celebration and despair, grounded and wayward journeys. Today's passage encompasses most of these aspects of life. It is a parable that Jesus told to disrupt a distorted rhythm or picture of God that the religious leaders held and carried with them wherever they went. In many ways, it is a continuation of what we saw in, as Brittany dubbed him last week, Sassy Jesus, as he responded to the questions about the Sabbath in Matthew chapter 12. Because today's parable is a familiar one, it is that of the so-called lost son. I'm air quoting for those of you who can't see me, lost son. I'm going to read it from the Message, which is the same text that Brittany used last week as well. And I want to encourage you to just settle in as I read this, to take a deep breath, and to listen, noticing what draws your attention, and noticing how the story lands in your body. This is Luke 15, starting in verse 11. Then he said, "There was once a man who had two sons. The younger said to his father, 'Father, I want right now what's coming to me.' So the father divided the property between them. It wasn't long before the younger son packed his bags and left for a distant country. There, undisciplined and dissipated, he wasted everything he had. After he had gone through all his money, there was a bad famine all through that country, and he began to hurt. He signed on with a citizen there who assigned him to his field to slop the pigs. He was so hungry he would have eaten the corn cobs in the pig slop, but no one would give him any. That brought him to his senses. He said, 'All those farmhands working for my father sit down to three meals a day, and here I am starving to death. I'm going back to my father. I'll say to him, Father, I have sinned against God. I have sinned before you. I don't deserve to be called your son. Take me on as a hired hand.' He got right up and went home to his father. When he was still a long way off, his father saw him. His heart pounding, he ran out, embraced him, and kissed him. The son started his speech. 'Father, I have sinned against God. I have sinned before you. I don't deserve to be called your son ever again.' But the father wasn't listening. He was calling to the servants, 'Quick, bring a clean set of clothes and dress him. Put the family ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Then get a grain-fed heifer and roast it. We're going to feast. We're going to have a wonderful time. My son is here, given up for dead and now alive, given up for lost and now found.' And they began to have a wonderful time. All this time, his older son was out in the field. When the day's work was done, he came in. As he approached the house, he heard the music and dancing. Calling over one of the houseboys, he asked what was going on. He told him, 'Your brother came home. Your father has ordered a feast, barbecued beef, because he is home safe and sound.' The older brother stalked off in an angry sulk and refused to join in. His father came out and tried to talk to him, but he wouldn't listen. The son said, 'Look how many years I've stayed here serving you, never giving you one moment of grief. But have you ever thrown a party for me and my friends? Then this son of yours who has thrown away your money on whores shows up and you go all out with a feast.' His father said, 'Son, you don't understand. You're with me all the time and everything that is mine is yours. But this is a wonderful time and we had to celebrate. This brother of yours was dead and he's alive. He was lost and he's found.' This is the word of the Lord." Before we head into some small and larger group conversation, I want to offer up a few thoughts. The first is this: the needs of some are not the needs of everyone. We are all on a journey of becoming. While it's easy to pick on the waywardness of the younger son's journey, we might also consider how wayward both sons' journeys were, as well as that of the religious leaders being addressed in this parable. In heading to a distant country, the younger son abandons agricultural work, which would have brought a loss of respect upon his family and his whole people group. Obviously, he also squanders his assets, all of that is meant to sustain life, right? This quite possibly would have added to the elder son's burden, because as the eldest, he retained the responsibility to care for his elders, for his parents. However, we shall not feel too bad for the elder son, because according to the law found in Deuteronomy 21, he would have been given or entrusted with double the amount, therefore 2/3 of the estate. In rejection of the celebration, the older son also rejects kinship boundaries secured by sharing food, by coming to the table. We can hear this rejection of kinship in the words that he speaks and the lack of identifying himself as the younger son's brother. He doesn't do that. And of course, let's not forget the Pharisees and the scribes to whom Jesus is actually addressing in this parable. They are invited to find themselves represented in the parable as the elder son, responsible and obedient, it would seem, but failing in their solidarity with the redemptive purposes of God. The second thing is this. God's redemptive nature is to celebrate when beloved, when kin return. The image of the father recognizing the younger son, even in his most distant form, and with abandon running to meet the younger son, is one that actually dishonors himself, or at the very least makes a fool of himself in the culture or the structures of the day. Likewise, so does leaving the guest at a party to go plead with the elder son as he seeks restoration and calling him son. Here we have an image of vulnerability and a free bodily expression. The father is dancing in his own way. Completely caught up in celebration, the father is not listening to the son's apology speech. Now, that doesn't dismiss the necessity of confession nor the healing of relationships through apologizing. But notice the father hears nothing of the son's expression, "I don't deserve to be called your son ever again." Rather, the father is celebrating that the son is home, safe and sound. Once again, located in that place which we might call a haven of belonging. A place in which scarcity does not exist. Where being with or in the presence of also means full and abundant communion. The sharing of all. In throwing a feast, in offering up a cow, which, remind you, is a huge asset. Not only is the reconciliation of the family celebrated, but the reconciliation of the entire village, which too was impacted when one of their kin walked away on that road toward death. The whole village kin were reconciled as the younger son was brought to his senses. In other words, when he repented or changed his mind, returning then along the good road that leads to life. The story kind of leaves us hanging. It doesn't say how the older son actually responds to the invitation, but I'd like to believe that he too was brought to his senses. We are all on a journey of becoming, and so is every person we encounter. That feels pretty evident in our current social and political landscape. a reminder to extend wonder and grace to ourselves and those around us, however difficult that might be. It is a journey of mountains and valleys, wayward paths and groundedness. We all experience being brought to our senses in different ways. And with every return, we are invited to celebrate kinship, not only individually, but collectively. The invitation is to dance in those moments, to allow ourselves to break free from bound expression, to be so moved by the Spirit that nothing hinders the fullness of solidarity with God in the kingdom, to once again embrace the full inheritance of kinship, named, beloved, reconciled, gathered around the table, celebrated. Yes, dancing disrupts the regular and often disconnected flow of life, and it creates new rhythms of being. Eventually, cycles will end. The kingdom will be whole. There will be harmony and no more need for laws and structures to guide us. Next week, we're going to consider these ideas. But in the meantime, in this liminal space, dancing teaches us new rhythms of being. May it be so. Amen. We're going to move into a time of small group and larger group reflection on today's parable. As a reminder, I want to encourage you to use visual description, and we're going to reflect that too in the larger conversation, the larger group conversation. If you need some assistance in kind of figuring out what that visual description might look like for yourself, there are cards, I think, on most of the tables or in the baskets there. So I encourage you to use those. All of the questions for reflection are in the bulletin. However, I might encourage us to turn our attention mostly to the last question, maybe, as a way to prompt some discussion amongst our groups. And as a reminder, our small group conversations afterwards will have a chance to reflect back to the larger group what resonated with us. That may mean that there is something that you said or maybe something that you heard that resonated with you, and you can encourage other group members to either share during the large group time, or you can simply reflect back what resonated with you from your smaller group, okay, that you think might be a gift to this larger group. All right, so I'm going to give us a few minutes for conversation. Feel free to move about, regroup. Maybe the natural grouping feels a little too big, you want to be smaller, or vice versa, or maybe you need to sit by yourself. That's okay too.